It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 346. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can send me an email for any question, suggestions for future show topics. My email address, miketechshow@gmail.com. And now working, mike@miketechshow.com works. You can leave me a voicemail message. I have a great voicemail for the end of the show where there's a valuable lesson and an important question that a listener is putting out to everybody. It's a problem that he's having with someone with deleted files, and I've been in this situation and I don't have an answer. The voicemail number is 240-949-2450. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow. And of course, Facebook, send me a friend request. And that's facebook.com/MikeTechShow. I really missed doing last week's show. I couldn't wait to do the show tonight. Felt like something was wrong because I wasn't recording. And I was moving a couple clients. And that's what we're going to start with the story of moving and the technology piece of moving my clients, where I have some interesting stories. And then I want to talk about a Verizon email problem that you might not be aware of if you have a Verizon.net email account. And we're going to talk about Windows Service Pack 1. So we just got lots on the plate tonight. So to begin with, why I missed last week's show, I have 8 separate financial advisors that were all in one building on one floor in Conshohocken, PA. Their lease was up at the end of February. Now, we knew this months in advance that they were going to separate. They were sharing resources on the one floor, where they were sharing the same switches. There was 2 switches. I had a business Comcast internet connection. Actually, there was 2 because there was a law firm in the middle of this. And all the technology they shared for their access, but they were all individual agents where they were all separately billed for me. They were all separate clients. They decided to move in 4 different directions. 3 of them moved to a different location, another building within Conshohocken, different floor, nice new suite. 3 of them moved to Plymouth Meeting area where they purchased their own building and had that remodeled. And then I had 2 individuals just move to 2 separate areas, one in Westchester and one outside Philadelphia. All my clients moving. Now, the 2 single clients, they moved during the week a couple weeks ago. No problem. I was able to schedule them, handle the technology move, and it was very simple, straightforward. Well, the 2 bigger ones, it gets very complicated. These agents have a special router from the home office that creates a virtual private network, which is an encrypted tunnel back to the home office. One group was taking that router. So the other group that's moving to a new location, they need a new router and it needs to be set up. And there's a process for that. One group is taking the phone system and that's being moved. And there's a telecom company involved that is moving it. The other company installing voice over IP. Now, I have some pre-meetings with the voice over IP company, and they tell me they only need 2 static IP addresses. one for the VoIP server and one for their PoE switch. PoE is power over Ethernet switch, and it's a Cisco switch. I needed a static IP address for a file server that I was providing them so they could all share their files. They didn't have that before. They used to just have a little workstation, a peer workstation, and I was able to convince them, you know, to go to a server. Now, when you have this, everybody separating, we find out that they want to move on the same day. Not only do I have to dismantle equipment for the one group and the network switches and the router, well, we have to buy all new stuff for the other group. So when you're buying new in a move, it's very easy to move because you can go to the new location, you can set up the new switch, and you can get it working. Well, the problem, the switch was being provided by the voice over IP provider, and that switch was not installed yet. So now I got to make sure internet connectivity is up in both the sites. I now have to make sure on the one site that we have this custom Cisco router that's programmed with the VPN. I got to make sure that works. So I have to coordinate that with their parent company. This takes time, takes planning. And then you have the actual move. Well, we find out, and this really helped me out, you cannot have two moving companies in their current building in the same day, because it would tie up the elevators and it would just be mass confusion having these trucks at this building. So I actually like that. So that means it forced one company to move earlier than the other. That's when I found out Thursday was gone last week. I was planning on being available Friday and Saturday to do these moves. Now Thursday and Wednesday comes into play. And one of the major moves was going to be Thursday after hours, game over. I knew I wouldn't be able to do a show. So I find this out on Tuesday. So you can imagine what it's like for the moving to all of a sudden find out that you got to now move your offices a day earlier than when you were supposed to move. So think of those challenges from a logistics standpoint. In arranging a moving company now to come a day earlier, what if they're booked? And now you got to move into your new place a day early. This messed with the timing of the phone system for one of the clients. So now, because the phone system was not scheduled to be set up until Monday, this one group of three companies, there's really like three individual companies here that are going to be sharing the resources. Well, the company that was providing the phone system move was also doing the network cabling, which is what I care about. So Wednesday, I do a site survey of one of the new sites, and I'm at the site, and all of the cable is coiled up in the network, the room that's going to be the telecom closet or the network room, and they're all coiled up in the ceiling. There's no patch panel. And the next day, I am moving the network. This gets ugly. So I call the provider, and let's just say I used colorful language and had to force the company to come in there that day and finish the wiring. I made that happen. They came out, and they actually did a very, very good job. They had to pull someone off another job, but I needed this cabling finished. And it's very interesting when you talk to a company that's in the middle of doing a job and they decided to delay things, and you say, well, I have another provider that can come in here and finish this, so how much less are you now going to charge my client when I bring in a different vendor to finish the wiring? It's kind of interesting how they all of a sudden were able to finish the wiring. So I'm dealing with this on Wednesday. I insist upon backing up the workstations of these three companies that are moving. It involves nine workstations, and I want to grab the data, or at least an image, of all of these systems on a nice big drive before we move. And they agree, And so I spend Wednesday and Wednesday night imaging, getting an image of all these systems. The Windows 7 system's piece of cake. Use the built-in Windows imaging, no problem. I have a 2 terabyte external drive. I'm able to nail everything. I have solid backups of all of the systems. Wednesday, I find out that if we move and take all of the telecom equipment, if I take the switches and I take the main router, what happens to the people that are already there on the floor that are going to move Friday? They're not ready to move Thursday. They want to do business as usual. They will be without an internet connection, and it will be impossible for them to do their business. So I talk my one client into allowing me to leave these old switches, and I say, buy 2 new Pro HP ProCurve switches. They're very inexpensive. Order them. Let's get them delivered the next day. I'll install them at your new location, and then we won't disrupt the current internet connection of the people that are already at location A here. Okay. I hope everybody's with me. Probably lost half of you, but anyway, so now I'm able to preserve the internet connection for the people that are going to move Friday, and I'm now able to move the people on Thursday. So what do we find out on Thursday night? The individuals move their computers. They have movers moving the desks. My son, my oldest son, Michael, and I are patching. I program the 2 HP switches. I patch it. I take the router, which was programmed by the home office before I moved it. I put it in place. I can't get out to the internet. I was like, everything's hooked up perfectly. I can't get out to the internet. I don't understand. So I call the support for the gentleman that programmed the router. Well, it seems like he programmed it wrong. So they now, I said, look, I know enough of the Cisco command language to be dangerous, but I can probably fix whatever's wrong. They were going to ship a new router. It would take a few days. I said, no. You're going to walk me through whatever changes have to be made to this router, and I will do it from my end. So I make them go over some of the commands. This was an ugly hour, but we get through it. They walk me through all the commands that's needed. I reprogram the router, VPN lights up, everything's great, and we can get out. I have everything working. How about this, though? In the move, one of the individual systems crashes. Now, remember, I made them agree to a backup. But what was wrong with the router? The IP address was wrong. They flipped the IP address and the gateway was wrong. And it took us a little while to figure out what was wrong. That was for DS Stream in the chat who asked what was wrong with the router. So it was just an IP problem. And once we got the right IP addresses, which we used the proper static IP address that Comcast was giving us, then things started work, but it took us a few minutes to figure out what was wrong. One client, one of the machines, it will no longer boot. The drive is just making noises, and this is a very old Dell computer. I have a backup of all the data. I said, look, we'll deal with this on Friday morning, and let's see what happens, because now it's getting late on Thursday. The system has whole disk encryption from Safeguard. So no utilities can be used. If you do not boot with the whole disk encryption boot, you cannot access the data. So unfortunately, I couldn't run SpinRite. There was many things that I would have loved to do, but the complication of the whole disk encryption being on it just added a whole new complexity. I have no problem. I have the data. He really wants a new machine, and this was a good excuse for the new machine since I had all the data backed up. Friday, we go on Dell's website, we order a new computer for him, and as a matter of fact, that came in today and was just being configured, and I'm going to be out there Monday just to do some tweaks and some things that need to be done. Friday, I spent the day with the copier vendor where there was a new, really nice, sharp multifunction copying machine. So I had to make sure all the systems, we could scan back to the desktop, we could print. I'm making sure all the little networks that are in place for these the three companies, they're all working. And now I spend literally 2 days making sure this company's up and running. The other three clients that are moving together to the new building, they move on Saturday. Well, they move on Friday, but they don't need me until Saturday morning. Now, my oldest son was supposed to help me, but between Thursday night and Saturday, he got sick as a dog and couldn't help me on Saturday. Ryan was free in the morning and the afternoon, so I used him to help me lug and set up a server, patch down some of the systems that were moved from Friday night. So Saturday we're at the other vendor, and we're just moving along, getting everything hooked up. Their printer wasn't scheduled to be set up until Monday. It was Monday or Tuesday. I'm losing track now of the days. So Monday, I'm back on the one site finishing up things. And then Tuesday, I'm back at the other site doing their printer. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Monday, Tuesday. All I did was help these clients. And I'm just, thank God it's over. Well, it's sort of over. Now we just got little things like one of the clients decides they want two network printers for their office. And they ordered them. One came in today. I think the other one's due coming in tomorrow. That's fine. I'll take care of that. These new offices, it's great. An insurance agent who writes car auto insurance has decided to upgrade their office. I learned this right before I go live on the show tonight. They just ordered from me two Dell computers, four flat screen LCDs because they want dual monitors on each, and a nice Xerox WorkCenter 3550. I am ecstatic. So I'm going to be setting that up, not this Saturday, the following Saturday. So hopefully all the equipment, I'll get that all ordered and get that coming in. I've just worked it out with my oldest son that he can help me. My sons are becoming integral helpers for me with my business because as I have some of the physical work that needs to be done, I need someone to help me. I wish that during this time, I would have loved to have had an apprentice learning the setups for these clients, because along the way, they're now going to need little support. And I have lots of notes, and it's great when you're setting up a network at a new location from scratch, and you know every nook and cranny, every printer that's installed. I intimately know the switches, and I know the configuration of everything in the setup. I've taken a million notes, and I have it all logged, and I've documented everything. To me, that's the fun part. Now I just want to turn it over to someone to continue supporting it that I could bill out and send there when they need help. That's where I hope to head for some of these clients, and hopefully I'll get to a point where that will happen. So this is, I would say, most of the stories. There's little stories in between that I'll probably think of and come back to later. Some lessons learned during all this. But for the most part, everything was very successful. My clients are ecstatic. Oh, and they just couldn't be happier. And that just makes me happy. And that just means more references and more referrals. New buildings where they have new neighbors in those buildings that are potential clients. I look at everything as an opportunity. We always have to have a moral to the story. And here is the great wrap up for this. My clients threw me lots of curveballs where there were things that should have been planned that they didn't think of and I had nothing to do with. And there were some things that I had no part of, but I was solving it. Everything that was thrown at me, I aggressively and quickly solved the problem to the complete satisfaction of my client. And that's all that matters. So when we're done, My clients are shaking my hand saying, a fabulous job, Mike. Again, thank you. And that's why we have you managing the IT and any movement of that IT and all of their technology. And that was the ultimate compliment and also what will keep me employed where they will be my clients. I did such a good job with one of the clients that the three companies that are together that moved, they are not a retainer client. We are now talking about a contract. So we can continue going further on a regular basis because right now I was always just break fix for a long time with the clients where I was always available because I was helping them part-time when I was doing this on the side for years. But now that I'm doing this full-time, I want to change them into becoming a retainer client. And they haven't needed my services on a regular basis like that because it's really only when a problem occurs and if I have everything set up, you know, they can run months and months without a problem. But their installations now are a little more complex. When you have a server, when you have smart switches, when you have a layer of complexity with these multifunction devices and things going on, it needs care and feeding. Maybe not a lot, but it needs some. And that means regular hours on a regular basis to keep an eye on everything. And that, when the client brings that up to me, and I didn't even bring it up, that's what I want. That was perfect. That's what I'm hoping. At the end of all this, I do a great job and then make sure that now let's finish it off with a contract. So, all right. So that was my moving stories. That's what I've been going through the past week. So you could see I couldn't wait to do the show tonight because I really, really, really missed last Thursday night. Let's talk about a Verizon email. I'll call it an email issue. Verizon may not, but I'll call it a Verizon email issue. Here's the situation. A new client asked me to look into an email problem, and I brought this up at the end of a show in a post show a couple weeks ago, and I had everybody that was left in the chat at the end of the night. I totally forgot to bring this up during the show, and I threw out this email problem where I have where I was going to visit the client the next day on Friday. And his problem was he's sending an email to a group of people that they can't receive the email when he's sending it from Outlook. It just vanishes. It's in his sent items. It looks like it's sent, but the person never received it. And it's a group of people. It's multiple people. He's Comcast.net. But when he's on the web, for his webmail, sends them the email, they get it. And he's sitting at home on the same system. He goes to another computer, totally different Outlook, sends the person an email, they don't get it. Okay, so we run a whole bunch of scenarios of things for me to try. New profile, we check the router, make sure there's no spam filtering going on. I check a lot of things. And then it dawns on me, hey, I have a Verizon.net account because I have Fios. I never use it. Let's send me some test email. He sends me a test email, and I don't get it. I send myself an email from my Gmail account from my iPhone. I send it to my Verizon.net account, and I don't get the email. He goes on the web, sends the email to me by just logging on the Comcast.net, sends it, and I get it. So I'm looking at all the settings at Verizon, and I notice something. Now remember, I have not used my Verizon email before. By default, Verizon, and this happened a few months ago, they made a change in their spam filtering. They have, by default, selected delete emails that are spam. That is the default. Let me tell you, for a company the size of Verizon to make deleting emails that are considered spam and to have that radio button checked as a default to delete emails that arrive, words can't describe. Unconscionable. I don't know what to... I cannot believe that. That is horrible. The company should... You should never, by default, delete on incoming because all of the false positives, all of those false positives that are happening, and here I am sending innocent emails, and they are being deleted. We find that every person that was complaining they are not getting his email, they are all 100% Verizon.net domain. Their email accounts are all Verizon, and what Verizon has done is they've ratcheted up the spam filtering to start catching lots of genuine email, and then, hey, you know what? We're going to delete it. We're not even going to let it go to the spam folder. So as soon as I went to the button in the settings, and if you are Verizon.net email user right now, stop what you're doing and just go to your Verizon.net settings right this minute and change the button in the filtering from delete spam on arrival to put it in the spam folder. There's just two options. Put it in the spam folder. We then test it by sending those messages, and they appeared right in the spam folder, like magic. And I figured this out within 20 minutes. And that in itself was amazing with the client. He was, of course, extremely happy. Needless to say, there's going to be other work. He can't even think of using anyone else for it. So that's the impact you got to make with some of these tips. When you're able to solve a problem like that, that's just a wow problem, and you're able to solve it, it makes such an impact and so, so important. That day, that was a Friday. I'll tell you, I almost did a show that weekend. Did you ever have one of those days where any problem thrown at you, you just solve it? I was in the zone. Windows 7 Service Pack 1. Don't know the fix yet, but right now, my automatic updates, it has appeared. I have tried to install it two different times where it has failed with an error, and I have not spent the time to research the error, nor have I disabled my antivirus. So I have a bunch of things that I want to try, and I'm going to do that this weekend, and I'll report back on the solution. So my caution is the following. If you're going to apply a major service pack to your operating system, I want you first to make sure that you've backed up all your data, that you've created a restore point, and that you are absolutely disabling all programs that you're running. Turn off your antivirus. Stop anything that is not essential and stop it from running and then give it a try. But I caution everybody because we were researching this before the show with everybody in the chat, and we've come across many people having a problem with the, and it seems, I'm wondering if it's because it's 64-bit or not. Now, I certainly can download, whether it be from TechNet or right online, I can download the service pack and give it a try. But I'll tell you, with my system, the way it rebooted, the way it locked up just a few minutes ago, and this is sort of part two of the podcast that I'm recording, I don't know what's going on. Before the service pack, before I tried to apply it, I think I overindulged in updates. There was some Adobe updates. There was Webcam Max updates. There were, I think, updates to almost probably every package or something I'm running. There was an iTunes update. There was like 40 or 50 Windows updates. I think I overdid it on updates. And now I have a feeling I'm being burned by one of them with loading up my resources with recording the show. I hope not. I hope this doesn't rear its ugly head again, but I will definitely keep you posted. I have a test install of Windows 7 that's virtual that's 64-bit, and I think I'm going to apply the service pack there before I dare touch my main production system again. And that's another valuable lesson that I learned. I should have never tried to apply that service pack because it's my production system and it's the day before a show. I broke my cardinal rule, which is do not apply updates or shoot myself in the foot within 24 hours of doing my live show. And I broke a rule last night and I started applying updates and I learned my lesson. There were two support issues that came up this week for my clients that I want to share some really good links that I think will help you if you run into this scenario. One client needed me to forward their Exchange email to an external address. And I have not done that in a long time. So I had to do some research, and there's a good website, msexchange.org. And in there, they describe how to accomplish this. And I forgot. And then once I seen the article, I was like, that's it. You got to create an email contact. So you take the user and you create an external contact. And it's very easy in Server Manager Active Directory Users and Computers. Create a contact in Active Directory. And in there, you assign the SMTP address to be their external address. Now, in the example, in the full name and display name, I put the word external. I like that because if anybody sees a duplicate address for that individual, they'll see that one of them is an external address and then one of them is internal. So what I've done, I went in and I created the contacts for those users. And then you go into Active Directory Users and Computers again. You double click the original account, and you go into Exchange General, and then you go into Delivery Options, and you pick to forward all of the email to the contact. And so now you select the contact, put that in the box, and then you have a checkbox. Do you want the email to be delivered to both places? Do you want it to be delivered to the original inbox and the external? So I was able to do this. Yes, someone asked, I'm talking about Small Business Server 2003. That is correct. And I was able to accomplish this for my client, but it's something that I had not done in a very long time. And the one thing you want to make sure is that you create the contact. And that was the key. And once you do that, then you're able to forward the mail to that contact. And it worked great. The next issue, a client had, been infected with some malware or a virus. And they were getting the following error after I cleaned up the virus. So I ran Malwarebytes a few times. It cleaned up everything. Ran Super Any Spyware. So the infestation is now cleaned. There's some residual effects. One of the errors was a runtime error. The Microsoft Visual C++ runtime library, the files/semantic antivirus rtvscan.exe. They would get this error repeatedly. And then their computer would say they have no antivirus. So after a lot of researching this particular error, there is a set of commands that you need to run to then be able to repair the semantic antivirus installation. I will have a link to the set of those steps. There is no way I would have ever figured that out on my own. And researching that very specific error and going through some forums, I finally found someone that posted a great answer, and then there were many people that get this error. So I guess it's after the virus is cleaned, after it's damaged and shut off your semantic antivirus, then this is what happens. And this is just some of the after effects that the virus left there. One of them is it turned off automatic updates, and you have to run fixes to be able to get automatic updates to return. I remember talking about a fix a while ago where the virus, the infection disabled the ability for you to run EXE programs, because they want to prevent you from going to Windows Update. They want to prevent your antivirus from finding it. They want to prevent you from running a program that can clean the infection. You have to be aware after you do a big cleaning, all these things. Sometimes there's so much damage and there's so many effects afterwards that it's almost better to redo the system. I didn't spend a lot of time on this, and I was able to fix it, so I keep moving forward trying not to redo the system. At some point, it doesn't pay, and you're just better off making sure all the data has been backed up and then redo the system. I have a voicemail that I want to play describing a problem that I know a lot of you have run into, whether you've run into it yourself, you know someone that has done this, and I don't know the answer. And this has happened to me a long time ago. Give a listen to the situation, and then I'm looking for some answers. Here we go, if there are any.
Hey, Mike. This is Scott from Michigan giving you a call. I have a data recovery question for your show. My neighbor went to Mexico about a couple weeks ago, and while he was in Mexico, he took a lot of photos, specifically 264 photos. While he was there, he ran low on his space, on his memory card, on his camera, and proceeded to cut and paste the photos from his memory card to his Windows 7 Service Pack 2, or I apologize, Windows Vista Service Pack 2 laptop in the My Documents folder. He, obviously, because it's cut and paste, he no longer has the photos on his SD memory card, but they are on the laptop. And they are named the default name of the camera, which is something to the effect of photo001.jpg all the way up to photo264.jpeg. He proceeds to continue taking photos on the now empty memory card all the way up to 264 once again on the memory card. This past Saturday, he proceeds to plug the memory card into his laptop and once again cut and paste the photos into his user My Pictures folder. Windows Vista prompts him, should he rename the photos? Should he not copy the photos or overwrite the photos? He selects to overwrite the photos. Bear in mind, this is because the photos are still named the generic name that the camera names them, photo001.jpg. The reason why it seems to be doing this is because he originally deleted the photos off the camera, resetting its file numbering scheme back to photo001 for the first photo. So now he has the original photos, photo001.jpg, and through photo264.jpg, all lost. But he does have the new versions of photos at different locations used in Mexico. So my question is, how does he get the original photos off of either his laptop or the memory card? The laptop has been used for 2 days. is Monday, February the 28th. Saturday is when he copied over the photos. So he has been having some reading and writing on the hard drive in the meantime. I told him to turn off the laptop and no longer use it until I find a method to recover. The camera has not had any new photos added to it in the meantime, and I also told him not to take any additional photos on that memory card. And I decided to test a few of the free photo programs on my own laptop. So I proceeded to put two photos on my C root directory, just in a folder named pictures, named them 1.jpg and 2.jpeg at 1 megabyte apiece. Got two more files at 0.5 megabyte apiece, named 1.jpeg and 2.jpeg, and proceeded to overwrite the original 1.jpeg and 2.jpeg. Ran a program called Recova, which is also made by the same company. I believe it's Pyraform is how you pronounce it, the same company that makes CCleaner. And it finds the new updated 0.5 megabyte files without any issue, but not the original overwrote files of 1 megabyte piece. I have not tested on his computer yet, but assuming that it's going to do the same theory on my own laptop running Windows 7 as it would on Vista, the free programs of recovery, I believe, base most of the recovery off of file name, not off of file size and date taken. He does not have any backup method in place whatsoever. He does not have Windows backup. He does not have Dropbox. Does not have Mozy, Carbonite. None of those programs configured to back up his computer. So I'm wondering, how would he get those original 264 photos back? He does have access to both the memory card and both the laptop. I'm not sure if he could recover from either or. Thank you for your help, and have a great day.
Unfortunately, I don't think I have an answer for you, or at least one that you're going to like, because the files were overwritten with the same name. I think it's almost impossible to recover them, and I think they're lost. But there's other programs out there that you just might want to just give it a try because you have nothing to lose. There's a program called Restoration that I like for deleting files. Now, here's the thing. When you have a file and you write another file to it with the same name, is the original file there but with question marks where you might be able to look and piece together that original file? I'm not sure, but because they were wrote, even though they're a different size, I don't think you're going to be able to pull it back, or if you can, it's going to be corrupt. Wow, I really do not think that you're in a position to be able to get these files back. And that's unfortunate. The lesson here, you must have a backup in place. And you must make sure that you are backing up the files and you find any way, especially something like your photos, movies, your files. They're so important to you. You must take the time and you must find a way and an option to back it up. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there that don't understand that until they are faced with this situation. So what I would like you to do, if you have some recommendations here, I will pass them on to the listener and he can give them a try. But let me know if there are some things that we can recommend for this situation. And if anything, we're going to learn about all the different options of trying to recover deleted files, lost data. I don't mind you overwhelming me with those options, because then I can plan on a recovery show and we will talk about it so we can all learn from this And that would be great because we may learn some utilities that haven't been mentioned in the chat or I haven't mentioned before that we might not have heard of. And you might be sitting there sitting on the ultimate program that can help recover lost files and lost data. Please share your solutions with me so I can put a future show together with all those options. Hope you enjoyed tonight's show. It was sort of in two parts because of some of the technical difficulties, but I know I was able to save everything, so I hope you enjoyed the show and all the stories about helping my clients move, all the technology demands and the problems in picking up a network and moving it to another location. So I hope you enjoyed that. Hope you learned something from that. And please continue to use the Amazon link on the left-hand side of my website for your purchases. It really helps. It makes a difference in supporting the Mike Tech Show. And you're doing a great job. And please spread the word and keep using that link for your purchases. I so appreciate it. That's it. I will talk to you same time, same channel next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.